When the Me Too movement got me to wonder, me too? I recalled an awkward conversation I had years ago in a bar for drinks after a conference. I sat next to a physician. She was wearing a sleeveless shirt, and I could see from her arms that she was in pretty good shape. I tried to be cool. "So, what's your sport?" I asked. "What?" she said, confused. "Well, you're an athlete, aren't you?" I asked. I thought she'd be flattered. But, "Hey, nice arms!" isn't always the right start to a real conversation. She answered flatly, "I kayak." Flailing, I pretended that I hadn't rushed a near stranger into a conversation about her body. Instead of apologizing or pausing, I tried to compensate. I pushed further, clumsily shifting gears with ironic suaveness. "Okay," I said, "enough about you." More about me. Oops. It was the kind of line you'd expect from an angry comedian. Sort of like, "Lighten up!" but cartoonishly brash. I was trying to distract from the awkwardness. She glanced toward the exit. Thinking back, I realize I was burying shame with cheesy bravado. My words didn't suit me, and they didn't suit the situation. I should have trusted the conventions of conversation appropriate to newly acquainted colleagues. The Me Too movement prompts me to think not about just the big, distant offenses of celebrities and producers and politicians, but about the small moments. What if I'd had power and she'd laughed and gone along with it because her next research grant depended on me? Would I have ever stopped even to think about it or to apologize? I mean, she had every right to be uninterested. She didn't owe it to me to lighten up. I wasn't entitled to her attention or approval. I mean, sure, maybe it was a small offense, but I learned from feminism and from Unitarian Universalism that respecting the worth and dignity of others requires intention and staying present. It's easy to misstep, and if I do, I'd rather apologize and think about it than build a defensive armor that perpetuates the problem. I doubt the Me Too movement has time to deal with me trying to chat up an intimidating colleague in a hotel bar. The Me Too movement already has too much to deal with. But the small stuff does matter. I too have my own work to do.
That dress looks great on you. I used to think that was a simple, straightforward compliment, a nice way to affirm someone's appearance in a way that makes them feel good. Over the course of my life, I've slowly come to understand that it's more complicated than that. And context is everything. If I say it to an elderly aunt, "Auntie, that dress looks great on you. The color matches your eyes." Then probably, yes, she receives it as I intended, a compliment. It is likely that she would feel pleased at the affirmation. But if, for example, a straight, married, male-identified boss says it to a female-identified employee to whom he is attracted, then "that dress looks great on you" can have the opposite effect. Instead of feeling good, the woman can feel any number of negative feelings. This one is fairly clear-cut, right? You could list the ways in which this one is problematic. First and foremost, at work, she wants to be recognized for her work, not her appearance. Secondly, if indeed she does not like the comment, she may feel conflicted about how to respond. Social pressures demand that the proper response to a compliment is "thank you" with a smile. If she does anything else, she may worry that she'll be thought of as rude, cold, or difficult. Thirdly, her boss has power over her, so she may feel extra pressure to give him the expected response, even though it is contrary to how she feels, as not to incur the annoyance of her boss and potentially prompt negative treatment in her work. Fourth, if she does feel pressured into accepting the compliment with a "thank you" and a smile, she may worry that she's giving him the impression that she appreciates, even welcomes, his attraction to her, which she does not. Fifth, since he is married, she may feel an extra weight of discomfort about what his wife would think about this. She does not like the feeling of potentially and unwillingly being a point of contention in their marriage. Finally, she is likely annoyed that his inappropriate comment has just burdened her with all this complication and icky feelings when the thing she wants to be focused on is her work. She does not feel good. In this case, the comment does not have the effect of a compliment. So, context is important. There is the okay context and the definitely not okay context. What about all the gray area in between? The more I dig into this, the more this point becomes clear. In an ideal world, where there was no sexism and no objectification of women, maybe a compliment on a woman's appearance could be, in most cases, received as it was intended, a positive affirmation to which the recipient responds positively. Sadly, we don't yet live in that ideal world. Our culture is steeped in sexism, putting people in restrictive boxes based on their gender identity, and valuing the feminine less than the masculine. There's a long history and pervasive cultural norm of regarding women as objects rather than beings, objects to be used for the purposes of others. As a mother of a daughter, I had so hoped we'd be over this by now. But women's bodies are still used to sell cars and beer, and there's still a girl aisle at Toys R Us, all pink, loaded with Barbies and toys that teach girls to practice grooming, makeup, jewelry, clothes, etc., all underscoring the importance of female appearance. Women and girls are still constantly receiving comments on their appearance. Constantly. It's kind of disturbing when you start to pay attention
to how often we do this. I've caught myself saying to kids at church things like, "What a pretty dress," or, "Oh, I like your glittery shoes." Not that it's bad in and of itself to affirm glittery shoes, but they hear it all the time, especially the female-identified kids. What they don't hear as often is, "What are you reading these days? What activities are you into?" Or simply, "It's good to see you. How are you feeling today?" Think about that. What else could you say to a kid at church that is unrelated to appearance? Any ideas? Anyone want to shout out an idea of something you could say to a kid that doesn't have to do with their appearance? "You're strong. I'd like to hear you sing or see you sing. I like your smile." It's a lot easier to default to what we see. "What a pretty dress." It takes extra work, extra thinking and care to go deeper. Natasha Devon, who works on mental health issues in schools in the UK, says that she, quote, "challenges parents and teachers to spend 1 week engaging in a compliments swap challenge. This involves replacing praise focused on appearance with praise related to character. For example, instead of commenting on a person's shoes or hair, the emphasis is moved to remarking on astute observations, acts of bravery, or kindness," end quote. She says that even the most enlightened people are usually surprised when they begin noticing how often they default to appearance-based comments. The constant comment on the appearance of female-identified people of all ages is not only irritating, it has harmful effects. An article in Psychology Today says that, quote, "research shows that appearance commentary, both critical and complimentary, contributes to negative outcomes." There's a whole book about it, "Beauty Sick: How the Cultural Obsession with Appearance Hurts Girls and Women." The author points out that, quote, "we pummel them with a standard of beauty they will never meet, and then, when they worry about beauty, we call them superficial," end quote. Look at the Instagram posts of female-identified teenagers, and you can see the anxiety-laden obsession with appearance coming through loud and clear in carefully posed selfie after selfie. As was stated by an organizer of a project called #WomenNotObjects, quote, "the people who are harmed most are the children. Girls are growing up thinking that how they look is more important than how they feel or who they are or what they can do." I'll repeat that. Girls are growing up thinking that how they look is more important than how they feel or who they are or what they can do. So that's one sad fact about our not yet ideal society that makes complimenting the appearance of a woman especially fraught. Another feature of our not yet ideal society that complicates matters is revealed when we look into the dynamics of street harassment. Last summer, I heard it on an episode of The Current on CBC Radio, this topic. They gave some real-life examples of things men have yelled out to women walking by on the street. It's disturbing stuff. I'll just give three examples. I almost edited it out, but I think it's important that we know what these women endure. "Baby girl, you're so sexy. Baby girl, I'd hit that. Look at that ass. Do you do squats? You're way too sexy to be walking alone. Slow down. Just let me lick your shoulder." The speakers on the program pointed out that when a woman indicates that she does not appreciate the comment, whether she ignores it or gives the person a steely look or verbally shuts it down, often the situation escalates. The man yells insults at her, or worse. They gave one example that was caught on video in France. A woman told the man to shut up, and he threw an ashtray at her, then slapped her in the face. Julia Lalonde, director of Hollaback Ottawa, a local chapter of a global movement to end street harassment, said, quote, "This incident in France is a perfect example of how you can't win in these situations. If I smiled, then the perception is that I was into it. If I tell him to shut up like the woman did in France, then I'm asking him to physically assault me as a result." She continues, "Whenever I talk to men, and young men in particular, about street harassment, the perception is always that it's a compliment. I'm just trying to play you a compliment. I'm just trying to say something nice." Well, if that was the case, then me saying I don't want to hear it shouldn't make you become physically violent with me. End quote. I'm so struck by that argument. And maybe you too have struggled to explain this to people. The goal of a compliment is to make the other person feel good. The giver of a genuine compliment cares about how the receiver feels. If the receiver tells the giver it does not make them feel good, shouldn't the response be some kind of apology? "Sorry, my bad, didn't mean to offend, won't do it again, have a good rest of your day." In the cases in which these men disregard the women's feelings, that negates the claim that it really was a compliment in the first place. His own needs are driving that train, railroading right over what she tells him she wants. That is not a compliment. That's control, manipulation, and dominance. So this is the context. This is what women and female-identified people are living with. Constant comments about their appearance, at all ages, from all genders. A culture that objectifies them, that focuses more on how they look than on who they are. Unwanted attention. Catch-22s that don't allow them to say no to unwanted attention without risking social penalty or physical harm. Given this context, "that dress looks great on you" is maybe not the best option in the array of possible compliments. If our intent is to make her feel good, we could try affirming something else about her, something kind she did, a good idea she had, anything we appreciate about her character. This isn't just for men. This is for all of us, of all genders. Just like we talked about practicing with the kids, it's a good experiment with adults as well. Try going a week without commenting on appearance. When I do it, I notice how often I default to complimenting appearance. And I notice that, true to the culture in which I am steeped, I too comment more on the appearance of female-identified people than other genders. "What a lovely scarf. Nice outfit. Your hair looks great." When I take appearance-related comments off the table, I have to work a bit harder. But I find that it pushes me to say things that matter more. I focus more on finding out about how the other person is doing, what they care about, what's been on their mind and in their hearts. Like I said, it's a challenging experiment. You could try it for a week and see what you notice. See what kind of non-appearance-based affirmations you come up with. How you do in tracking what people care about and asking after those things. If we want to become a people of trust, if we want to create a community in which people are valued for who they are, not how they look, it seems a worthwhile experiment. So that was the first puzzle I was puzzling over, the issue of complimenting people, especially female-identified people, on their appearance in this messed-up context of a sexist and misogynistic world. The second puzzle that occurs to me, and with which I've seen people struggle, is this. What if you are interested in someone romantically and want to make that interest known? How does flirting work in this day and age? Again, our messed up culture has made it a minefield. A common scenario, and this can happen with any gender and sexual orientation combination, but it seems extra problematic when it's a straight male identified person with a straight female identified person. He is interested in her and says or does something kind of flirtatious. Maybe he comments on her appearance. If she's interested in him and she reciprocates, it proceeds from there. Fine. But what if she's not interested in him? If she says directly that she's not interested in him romantically, she risks embarrassment. Maybe he wasn't flirting. Maybe she misinterpreted. He could respond, "What, you thought I was flirting with you? That's a little bit arrogant." Or, "Just because I'm flirting with you doesn't mean I want to date you. Don't take everything so seriously." If she tries to shut down the flirting non-verbally by being aloof or unresponsive, she could be accused of being rude. Or worse, it could escalate like in those street harassment scenarios. Some people can get mean when they feel rejected. If she doesn't want to risk any of those scenarios, she's left with the option of the expected response, smiling and going along with it, while trying not to be too encouraging. She feels uncomfortable and trapped. He feels confused. Lose, lose. Is there a better way? I asked some colleagues who teach OWL, our Whole Live Sexuality Education Program for Unitarian kids, youth, and adults. One colleague told me about an exercise that the youth do in which they practice asking each other out on dates. Each youth has to practice ask 6 to 8 different people in a row. The person can say yes or no, and no matter what the answer, the asker needs to respond with, "Okay, cool." Like this. Is that one on? Green light. Push it, hold it. Yeah. Do you want to maybe go out sometime?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Different person. Do you want to go to a movie with me on Friday?
Like a date?
Yeah.
No offense, but I'm not really interested in you that way.
Okay, cool. I'd like to go out with you sometime, just you and me. Would you be up for that?
I appreciate the offer, but no thanks.
Okay, cool. Do you want to go on a date?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Do you want to go on a date?
No, thanks.
Okay, cool. The more they practice, the easier it gets. It helps them practice expressing their intent clearly and directly. It helps them practice saying yes or no clearly and directly. And it helps them practice receiving a no thanks with confidence and dignity. It struck me as kind of revolutionary. Vague and indirect is tempting because it is less of a risk to one's own ego. Rejection is sidestepped. But it also risks hurting the person one likes and making it confusing and uncomfortable for both parties. Vague and indirect is perilous. I suppose the advantage of online dating is that it helps people be more clear and direct. You know by virtue of the gathering space that everyone there is open to dating. It's like going to one of those old-fashioned singles groups. Also, in online dating, you can specify your status and interest. Single, looking to settle down. Single, not looking for anything serious. You can even specify no relationship, just a hookup. Both parties can clearly say yes or no to potential matches. All of that means that when someone asks someone else out, both are clear about the parameters and expectations. Nothing vague or indirect about it. I have heard about similar direct and clear methods that are used in some in-person contemporary subcultures. Whether it's online or in person, it seems like clear and direct avoids a whole lot of hurt and confusion. I wonder, though, about flirting. It seems like it would be sad to lose the fun of flirting. Maybe, in this newer model of interpersonal relations, flirting comes just a little bit later, after you've gotten to know someone well enough as a person, after you've been direct and clear with each other and both affirmed mutual interest in dating. Maybe that's when enough trust is built that flirting can be fun, and you can compliment one another's appearance to your heart's content. Before I close, I feel obligated to address the question of dating at church. It is a tricky situation. On the one hand, see, now you can affirm my bravery. That's a character affirmation. On the one hand, some people find their spouses at church, right? On the other hand, it is not a dating space, like a singles group or a bar or any of those other places where people go to explicitly look for romantic connections. In fact, and this is what makes it so complicated, a lot of people come here to get away from all that. They come here for spiritual sustenance, connections with others who care about making the world a better place. They would rather not be bothered here with anyone's romantic advances, and it is extra disturbing to them when it does happen here. So what do we do? It's not clear, but I'm guessing we'd all agree that extra care and caution are in order. Maybe first and foremost, we continue with our primary focus of connecting with one another as whole human beings. Maybe in support of that aim, we all work to create a bit of a countercultural space here, defy the societal norms that habituated us to commenting on people's appearance. Maybe we all build that culture that leans toward clear and direct communication. Whether or not we have any interest in dating, maybe that communal focus on clear and direct communication will help all of us become a people of trust. It's your community. You decide. Reverend Shauna and I are here to help if things get bumpy. I would like to close with a video. Perhaps some of you have seen it. It is a commercial produced by Gillette, the shaving company. It highlights problematic things we were taught about masculinity, including how men should treat women, and it lifts up a hopeful portrait of new ways. I have no illusions that Gillette is doing this for ethical reasons. I would not be at all surprised if this were a business decision designed to increase sales. I don't care. It is more important to me that the message is getting out there to people of all genders. Notice how it not only decries the old ways of objectifying women, it also shows examples of men standing up against others who still do. It airs on mainstream TV, so I suppose it does not need a trigger warning, but I find parts of it hard to watch, and parts of it make me want to cry. So do what you need to do to take care of yourself.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Toxic masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get?
Is it?
We can't hide from it.
Sexual harassment is taking over.
It's been going on far too long. We can't laugh it off.
Who's the daddy?
What I actually think she's trying to say.
Making the same old excuses.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys.
But something finally changed.
Allegations regarding sexual assault and sexual harassment.
But she says it's
not the best. And there will be no going back. Because we believe in the best in men.
Men need to hold other men accountable.
Smile, sweetie. Come on.
To say the right thing. To act the right way.
Bro, not cool. Not cool.
Some already are. In ways big.
Yo, men.
And small.
I am strong.
Ow.
But some is not enough.
That's not how we treat each other, okay?
Because the boys watching today will be the men of tomorrow.
The light in me sees the light in you. This is my wish, my prayer, that the light in every being on this planet is seen and honored and cherished. May we do what we can to make it so, one light at a time. Namaste.